This is Andreas from AO Performance. I am finally back, and I'm back because of one big reason. My guest today is a person I've listened to so many times, and I've studied him and his studies so many times. And I got the chance to join him in Colorado Springs in July to do 6 days of dissecting and a lot of hours of lectures with you, Antonio Stecco, and your sister, Carla Stecco. And it was, to be honest, Antonio, one of the best weeks of my life. It was absolutely incredible. So I'm so honored. I'm so happy to have you here to explore a little bit more about the fascia and the fascia system. And we're going to focus a little bit more against fascia and athletes. So I think this is going to be really, really interesting because I've been listening to a lot of podcasts out there. And this is not a lot of talk about fascia and athletes and fascia and sports. So I'm really looking forward to this. So, Antonio, thank you for taking the time. And I'm an honor to have you here.
Thank you for the invitation. Always a pleasure. And I'm here to try to give my best to help to try to explain why fascia is so important for all of them.
Yeah, it's, I've been doing training and treatment and rehab for a lot of years now. It's over 25 years now. And I came across fascia for the first time, right after 2010, 2011, around there. I was doing a biomechanics education in the US, and I was in the same group as James Earls, you know him? He was working with Tom Myers at the time. And he mentioned fascia for me and how important it was. And I'm like, okay. So the first thing I did was to go down and dissect for 5 days with Tom Myers to know what is this? Because it sounded really, really logic, and everything I was doing at the time and still does was totally speaking the same language. I'm like, okay, I think I'm on to something here. But back then, 12 years, 13 years ago, there was not a lot of science behind this. So, but I saw the results. I kept doing it. And I think today we're pretty safe to say there's a lot of science behind it. And so we're going to talk a lot more about that. But let us start first with Antonio. I know I mentioned your sister, Carla Stecco, and you are not Swedish, not American. Where are you from?
I'm Italian, but I'm a medical doctor. I'm now assistant professor in New York University School of Medicine. So before COVID, I was back and forward from New York to Italy, to Padova. Now COVID helped because I can do a lot of stuff by remote. Yeah. So I don't have to travel as much as I was in the past. But I have a different collaboration, a few grants with John Hopkins, with George Mason. So, I'm doing pretty good amount of research in US, and I'm teaching in more than 56 countries worldwide. So, by the way, we have grants also from China, because even China, they are super exciting about fascia as element to explain meridians. So, there is a lot of interest worldwide. I have to say, since 2011, the world has changed a lot, even from this perspective. I'm really happy that we are at the place where we are. I want to say, if COVID didn't hit in 2019, I think the fascia was exploding in 2020, because everything was set aligned to become a major topic in rehab, a major topic in sport. Yeah. We are, keep it up and move in that direction. We have just to wrap up the new information that we have, but I think it's time to bring all this information in the field.
Yeah, I think it's crucial too. I can't be more happy for your family that you guys are doing what you do. And so tell me a little about why fascia? How did it start for you?
Honestly, my father is really the pioneer. My father was in the first class of physiotherapy in Italy, by the way. So he was in four, literally. At that time, nobody knew what is rehab, generally speaking. Okay. Wow. Because there was no PT, there was no physiotherapy, there's nothing. There was just orthopedic surgeon. So when he get out from the school, nobody even know what is a physiotherapist. The people thought it was a doctor, a kind of doctor. Okay. And so he was really free to do whatever he wanted. And the orthopedic surgeon said, look, do what you can. So this is the patient, you know, get the patient out of the hospital. So there are such amount of freedom. And then on top of that, in Padova, you know, we have a amazing library with the original 30th century, 40th century, 50th century books. In
Wow.
that books, we have much more citation about fascia than recent books. Because unfortunately, as you know, over time, the new edition of the books, they try to cut down, make it simple, you know. And what you cut out, what you don't understand.
Right.
So for century, all the new books of anatomy was cutting out the fascia because nobody knew that it was innervated.
Right,
Nobody
right.
knew that is it connected with the muscle. Nobody knew how expand as wide is the tissue. It is why my father came out with the idea, with that information, that it should be important. So he started to dissect any kind of animal, and find out that the old animal are more complex, are more sophisticated is the motion, are more complex, elaborate is the fascia system.
Wow.
So now, for him, rabbit have an amazing fascia system, rather than a chicken. You know, if you eat a chicken, you will not be excited to see fascia. But if you try to evaluate a rabbit even before cook that one, you see fascia system amazing
Oh.
because it's fast, you
Right.
know. And so human and have a complex motion. Okay, and this is why we have a very sophisticated fascia system. As you train, of course, you make bigger your muscle, you make your brain more brilliant, but you build up new fascia reinforcement that facilitate your performance.
Right.
So outstanding athletes have amazing muscle, amazing coach, whatever you want, but he has an amazing fascia system. And we
Right.
saw that because when we did this action, the few athletes that they die for, you know, nobody know what, but probably, you know, can be different reason in young age. You feel a fascia, you see fascia reinforcement that you don't see in a regular person.
Right.
And if you try to see like a anatomical room with like a 20 body, you take it off skin and fat, you see from like a 5 meter, who of them have done a lot of sport, who not. Because
Right.
the fascia become more white, more bright.
Right.
Okay, so that is a clear sign of how much you train the fascia, how much you stimulate the deposition of collagen fibers or reinforcement that facilitate the motion and allow you to transmit force much farther away. So you can use muscle in the lower limbs to lift up your back. You can use the mass of the trunk to lift up your arm
Right.
because as much you have this band go around your body, are much more you can transmit force around the body.
But did your daddy do this on you? Were you an athlete when you were young? So your dad did this on you? So you felt the difference or what?
Well, that is the second step. I mean, when I was a teenager, I was a pretty good athlete. I mean, I was like the top one in my school.
What sport?
So a mix of athletes. So I mean, like
Okay.
the mix of like sprinter, you know, parallel and everything
Wow.
together. And of course, the minor injury you always had. And my father was able to fix right away.
Oh.
So you get curious because at the end of the day, I got pretty good, you know. And I
Yeah.
was not really training a lot. I mean, I didn't have any particular. So I did pretty well. So I was curious to say, but why it works so well? Okay. So at the end of the career of medicine, I was still exciting to figure out better why it works. And so we went through anatomy, physiology, pathophysiology to better understand the what we call densification. So an increase of the viscosity of the lubricant you have between muscle and fascia, or within the fascia.
I mean, that's incredible. First class in physiotherapy, that's pretty cool. So I understand that there were a lot of talk about fascia in your home with both you and Carla and your dad. What about your mom? How is she feeling about this?
I mean, she's in the middle, so she just keep going and try to moderate a little bit, but I mean, she cannot get out from there.
That's funny. So, okay. And then, so you saw that this, you felt on yourself that, okay, this is something different than like classic physiotherapy or classic rehab, I guess. And you got more curious to do more. So the fun thing about you say this is, so when I did this journey too, from like 2011, and I realized there were not a lot of science behind it, but I saw the results too, and I felt it on my own body because I had to quit pro hockey because of injuries, and I haven't felt, you know, as good as in my body as I do today, ever. And this is because I focus in on this for over 10 years now. And so back then I couldn't, even though it was not a lot of science, I had to keep doing it because of the results I had on myself and on my clients. And I mean, like, and I'm not a scientist, so I just kept doing and experiment and experiment and experiment and get better and better results. And athletes that I trained, they just loved it and it felt so good. And I mentioned to you before we hit the record that I haven't used a barbell in over 15 years, and I still got insane results with my athletes on the highest world level. So I did something right, and now what you guys have done, the work, you and others in the science world, to verify this, I'm so grateful for that, because I just kept working, and hopefully I can just keep working and come up with new things, and you can do studies on it, which is great for me. If we just go back a little bit I asked you why fascia. So we get that it was your father and you got, you know, inspired by him. So when, what happened when you, because you got, you have your own like school, can you say that, or university, where you,
True.
where you teach what you call fascia manipulation, which is kind of a fascia treatment model. When did you realize that? How to treat different with your like hands-on manual treatment than like the regular, maybe, you know, I guess the chiropractors were around back then, and the naprapath that we call them here in Sweden, or the regular physiotherapist. When did you realize we can do different with our hands, and how did you discover that?
Basically, my father, since the beginning, find out that manipulated specific area, specific spot, you can get the excellent result. And the most exciting part is that you don't treat the area of the symptom at all. Okay, the patient have pain in an area, you treat a completely different area because the area of the symptom is just when there is the poor biomechanics due to incorrect vector at the richer area. So my father saw that and so the patient was coming back and it was getting better and he want this treatment more and more. So basically he published the first book in 1987. So the first books. And then of course it start to translate in different languages. Now we have more than 14 language, the books in all most of the language. But you know, it was a process. So before we understood how important our specific area of the body where a lack of gliding joint a very important biomechanical problem. So we realized that not all the body is the same. You don't have to palpate around all the body and try to figure out stiff part because there is some stiffness that the patient don't even complain, doesn't even realize because it's not important for biomechanics. Other area where a lack of gliding, that joint a major biomechanical problem. So we have a shortcut to understand what is wrong in the patient. And on top of that, we correlate this area for where gliding is critical with the plane of the space. So we evaluate the body as is moving the three plane of the space, sagittal plane, frontal plane, horizontal plane. In this way, it's much more physiological because your brain is not thinking about flexion extension. Your brain is thinking about kick the ball. So you do a flexion of the hip, extension of the knee, dorsiflexion of the foot. It doesn't matter if it's an extension flexion. You have to kick the ball. You have to activate the synergic muscle and the fascia, bring together the motor unit that have to be activated together. So if you understand these concepts, you understand that the classical way that you analyze the body with flexion extension is not really, you know, clinical applicable. At the opposite, think about the movement in the space is much more applicable. And you can better understand what work together. So if you have an athlete that say, okay, when I kick the ball, I have pain in the groin.
Right.
All right. Maybe in the groin is nothing wrong there. Maybe is the structure more distally, more proximally in the same we call myofascial sequence that's the problem. And if the kicking, the symptom is not so intense, it can be a point, lateration of the gliding quite far that discharge incorrect load in the groin where there is the maximum mechanics. So it helps you tremendously to assess the patient and to understand that for specific motion in the space, there is a specific area that has to be assessed. And it gives you like the key for understand what we call musculoskeletal pain, and in particular, non-specific musculoskeletal pain. But I want to open a parenthesis. Are we really sure that even when there is a small lesion of the menisc, a small lesion of the labrum, is really the problem, or is the consequence of a poor biomechanics that go on from years? So this is why we say that most of the time, fascia disorder is the first. And then you start to have a poor biomechanics, overload in the joint, and you can start to have a meniscal alteration, labrum alteration, cartilage alteration. That is the consequences, not the original problem. If there was no major trauma, of course.
Right. This is so interesting. So if we, you said a few minutes ago, you said that we didn't know that fascia was highly innervated. So I know there's a lot of athletes listening to this. Can you explain what you mean with highly innervated?
So we have tried to do like a simple study. We have tried to analyze the concentration of free nerve endings 4 centimeters squared. Okay. And we try to evaluate the skin, the fat, the fascia, the muscle, the ligament, the capsule. And at the hip, in the region of the hip, just because it was simple to take sample during surgery. So of course we find out the skin is the way more innervated tissue ever. Because I mean, it makes perfect sense. You have to feel whatever is happening, temperature, pressure, whatever. Then we find out the superficial fascia that may be something new for a lot of athletes. That is a membrane in the middle of the fat. It's really well innervated because I have a lot of autonomic function. It perceived to feel like a vasodilatation, vasoconstriction, sudoration, you know, all this kind of stuff. They are not aware. But it worked for that. Then we find out the deep fascia have a high concentration. Then muscle, really nearby, but a little bit lower, and way low ligament and capsule. So what does it mean? It means that as high as the concentration, as more possibility of you know, painful arthritis can come from there. So it's like when you cut your fingertips, you're, you know, screaming. When you cut your nails, it's just a few millimeter above, and you don't feel anything. This is about innervation. So, you know, just few millimeter on and off, it make a completely different the painful afference. So because the fascia is a tissue that is more innervated than ligament, capsule, and muscle, it's supposed to be a more pain generator than the other.
That makes it a lot clearer. But so just to make it even clearer for our listeners, especially the athletes, so what's the difference between the fascia and the muscle? So I think we all know what a muscle is and what it looks like, the red meat stuff. So but what's the difference? Let's say for an athlete, why should he care about this fascia? He cares about muscles. Why should he care about fascia? What's the difference, muscles, fascia?
I mean, you're right because the fascia is not tasty. Muscle is tasty.
Yeah,
Okay.
exactly.
So you will not find out in your plate a piece of fascia to eat. The butcher will take it off.
Yeah.
So this is why it's not people are not really aware about fascia because it's like a flat tendon. So it's not tasty at all. It is tight, it's rigid, it's not you cannot bite. Okay. So that is why people are not really aware about that. And if you want to be smart, the filet mignon, the filet is so tasty because I have the lowest level of connective tissue. So psoas is a particular muscle that have a very minor amount of endomysium, perimysium. So the connective tissue, the fascia inside the muscle. This is why it's
Okay.
so tasty. So a more connective tissue, more fascia you have, a less tasty is the meat, okay? Because fat made tasty. So like
True.
in Brazil, you know, when you have like very tasty meat, they have a lot of fat.
Yep.
Or like a Kobe meat in Japan have a lot of fat. So fat and muscle fiber made it tasty. Connective tissue, no. Anyway, other than that, of course, fascia, it doesn't stop at the border of the muscle. It go ahead much wider, okay? So it's not really preserved when you do a dissection. It's not really preserved when you prepare like a meat for your barbecue, because of course you want to have the meat, okay? So, but at the opposite, the fascia goes so far and is able to transmit the force even farther than the normal tendon ligament. So you think that a muscle is able to generate the load force in the proximal and distal joint. In reality, it can do much more. So, you know, everybody can understand that. Let's say the glutes, it connect with the people call like IT band, and it push tremendously in the lateral ridge of the knee, even in the calf. So that means that you have to change the way you're thinking. The gluteus max doesn't work as much in the hip or only in the hip. It can have a maybe even higher action in the knee. So that means that from clinical point of view, you're not going to fix a knee pain if you don't take care of the pelvic region. Vice versa, it will be hard to fix a low back pain if you don't take care of the calf area, because they are so interconnected that there is such a huge amount of load that incorrect load coming from above affects below, and vice versa. So our body is so interconnected, luckily for us, that you have to be a have a more wider view assessment. Is really upsetting me the concept, the school of thinking that if the pain is in the knee, you cut whatever is above and below, and you focus the attention in that area. That's it. I mean, it's not human body. It could work for some particular animal that are very simple, okay? As I said, like in a chicken is really have such poor mechanics.
Right.
It's so embarrassing how it run because the mechanics is so poor. It's true. I have a pain. You see that it doesn't work properly. Probably the problem is in the hip. That is the problem right there.
Right.
Human is much more interconnected. You imagine when you're throwing. So when you're throwing, I mean, the shoulder is the last. Because you use the trunk, the hip, everything to throw. So if you start to have a pain in the shoulder when you're throwing, I mean, I think it's everybody can understand that it's not just the shoulder the problem. The problem can be all over the body.
Yeah.
So that is a big advantage, but at the same time, a disadvantage for a normal clinician to try to assess the athletes.
Why do you think? Just, I want your opinion. I don't know if there's actual research on this, but what's your opinion? Why do you think people still do like leg curls for knee problem, trying to strengthen the muscles around the knee or the VMO? Like, why do you think people still sit on down on a chair and kick their leg and try to get stronger around the knee and think that's going to help?
So, I mean, it's not incorrect, but between all the school of thinking, all the rehab, I think that strengthening without a rationality can be even risky for
Right.
athletes.
Right.
Because everybody can say, look, you know, I get better. I got better to do that. But are you really sure that you restore the biomechanics? Or there is a high risk that you fix the knee and then you start to have a hip problem or low back problem. Because when you train with a poor biomechanics, the body do amazing. In order to let you work out, it try to find out other compensation. That doesn't mean that you are going to be better. You're just going to find out a new pathological equilibrium that will flare up with other symptoms in the future. So I want to be clear. I don't want to say that is do not do strength training. Do strength training when you have restored the biomechanics. That will be the ideal situation, because what you do will be optimal. And let me tell you even more. After a cruciate ligament repair, you know, I've Talitza come in my office and say, you know what? It's 2 years that I do leg press. And my quad doesn't build up.
No.
You treat in 2 months, they build up the muscle more than the previous 2 years.
Yeah.
For a very particular reason, because the muscle spindle, that is a small like a structure inside the muscle, that is the one that decides when the muscle has to fire.
Yeah.
Okay. Muscle spindle, the capsule, so they are basically in the connective tissue. So if you don't have a correct connective tissue, you cannot allow the muscle spindle to fire, so to activate the motor unit properly. So there's no way that you activate the motor unit. You cannot even strengthen the area.
Yeah.
So again, restore the biomechanics, and then everything else would be amazing.
So you're mentioning... In the fascia, you mentioned nerve endings, and now when you're talking muscles, you're talking more about motor units and muscle spindles. What's the difference between a free nerve ending and the muscle spindle?
Good question. Free nerve endings is like at the end of the nerves, okay? And from there, you have it's just like a wire that end in the connective tissue. So if you squeeze that wire, you get an afference. That's it. Muscle spindle is a little bit more complex. It's like a spring, okay, with a nerve that go in the middle. So it's 2-3 muscle fiber inside. So when you these muscle fiber are the first one at the fire, and they pull this spring and this connective tissue around, so it check it out what's going on there, because the body doesn't want to do a massive contraction without know what's going on there.
Right.
Okay. So your brain is amazing, but your brain cannot know what's going on in one part of your body, because that part can be under load or in. All over, when you kick a ball, until you don't hit the ball, you never know how weight is as heavy as the ball.
Right.
You know, you don't know how slippery is the surface of the ball with your shoes.
Right.
So you have to constantly modulate the activation of the motor unit in relation to the environment. So the muscle spindle can feel the response of the contraction of the muscle with the environment. So it gives a constant feedback to modulate the activation of the motor unit. But, you know, people know the reflex. You know, when you tap the patellar tendon, the muscle, the leg move. Okay, that is due to the muscle spindle.
Ah, okay. Cool. And so if you build the muscles bigger, I guess that will affect the surrounding fascia, and that will affect the free nerve endings, I guess. So what if you just... doing like static training and muscle training and one joint training just to try to build big muscles, because there's a lot easier to build bigger muscles fast than building the fascia strong fast, right?
In fact, if you do testosterone, you build up big muscle, but not fascia.
Yeah.
So this is why bodybuilder, they tear what they call the biceps upon nevrosis, like the core that you feel in the elbow. You know, if you hook the elbow, the ventral part of the elbow, you feel like a cord. That cord is the most famous, we call myofascial expansion, the most famous connection between muscle and fascia. Through that structure, there is a huge amount of load that is transmitted. So bodybuilders that get steroid, they build up tremendously the muscle, but the tendon and the fascia doesn't build up with the same velocity. So they get tear. So they get a tear at that level. Because there is an imbalance between the power of the muscle and the resistance of the tendon. So if you tear the bicep on nevrosis, you have to have surgery right away. You cannot do anything. You cannot lift anything.
Right.
Vice versa, as you know, if you tear the long head of the biceps, you have like the popliteal muscle, but you have full quality of life. So just to tell you how is important the myofascial expansion, the fascia, because in this case, you tear the fascia, you don't have capacity to lift anything. You tear a tendon, you have full quality of life.
Yeah. Oh, that's really incredible. Yeah, I remember you were talking about, which I really liked in Colorado Springs, where you mentioned that we try to bypass the joints just to get the elastic recoil and elasticity from the fascia to so we can bypass the joints to take, to try to save the joints as much as possible when we move. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's really interesting.
Think about our leg, think about our arm, think about a guepard. The guepard is the faster animal in the world.
Yep.
How is the leg of this animal? They are so big, but they are not really big. They have a big glutes,
Yeah.
but they're very super skinny leg, isn't
Yeah.
it?
Yep.
Try to check it out in Google.
Right.
But they are the faster one. So, of course, if you want to be fast, the leg has to be relatively skinny because the stop and go, the back and forward is energy consuming. So there is nothing better to have big glutes that merge in a like a long socks. The socks is pulling the leg. I don't know if it makes sense to you. So basically, our body is made quite similar. You have to imagine to have a three long socks, a three long gloves in the arm. So this permit you to transmit the force of the pectoral major, deltoid, latissimus, okay, as well, gluteus max, and tensor fasciae latae and other muscle far away. So that is there is nothing better to have this kind of anatomy. So that long socks, long gloves bypass the joint and permit you to use the power of this big muscle in the trunk to lift structures that are far from the fulcrum. This is really efficient way to move, and this is the one of the major reasons why fascia is there.
And with the three layers of a glove or a sock, you mean that there's three layers of fascia that's working together?
Because there's one layer basically for each plane of the space. So
Yeah.
one at a more longitudinal, one a little bit more oblique, and one kind of transversal.
Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense to work out as much as we can standing up to get the whole body to be interconnected and do as much as you can as one unit, right? Because I felt a big difference when we started to incorporate more elasticity or elastic training for my athlete and myself. It was a big difference, especially in like quality movement and energy efficiency. It was incredible difference, and they got a lot faster too. And I know you did a study, right, about if you increase like the fluids, we could talk about the fluids too between these fascia layers, how we can slide and glide better. So if you have a better viscosity and better fluid, you can move the fascia layers better together against a relative to each other or relative to muscles or to organs, and then you can become faster as an athlete. If I try to explain this simple, right?
You have like a lubricant, like your engine. You have a
Yeah.
lubricant, an oil that help the piston to move in the cylinder. It's the same, like there's an oil between the muscle and the fascia. That oil is what people call hyaluronic acid mostly. And the quality of the lubrication of that oil make the big difference. Better is lubricant, better there's a gliding, so you know, less friction, less heat dissipation, better efficiency.
Yeah. And you mentioned hyaluronic acid. I know your sister and you and your team, you find a new cell back in 2018, which is has to feel incredible to be a part of finding a new cell in the human body at 2018, that you call the fascia site. And that role is has something to do with hyaluronic acid, right?
So these cells that we discover are these cells into the fascia that produce hyaluronan
Yeah.
because they need so much that has to be produced. Think about that we have like a 15 gram of hyaluronan in our body, and one third is replaced daily. So imagine how much work has to be done to degenerate this one because you want to maintain the correct lubrication. So you need a fast turnover.
How much did you say? 15.
1.5 gram in total body, but for everything like skin,
Oh,
where it is.
are real.
It about this, one third is a recycle,
Wow.
regenerate every day. So degenerate and recreate. So it's a lot.
That's incredible. Wow. So how should we think about, like, because a lot of athletes in, let's say we take team sports, like more explosive kind of sport. I'm more, it's, I know the most people listening to this podcast is because I work a lot with hockey and alpine skiing, so it's more like a power athletes. So if we think about power athletes, I know still a lot of especially maybe hockey teams out there, they train so much. There's so much load, which creates so much lactic acid, and it's not a lot of recovery, if any. What will happen to this lubricant? If we just keep loading and loading and loading, and we don't rest a lot.
I think everybody have experience when you overtrain at the end, I mean when you have really done too much, you feel a kind of stiffness, you know, the leg becomes stiff, the arm becomes stiff. I'm talking about like an end of marathon of this kind of heavy prolonged activity. Because when you're doing an aerobic activity or you train too much, of course the lactic acid in the muscle can drop the pH up to 6.7.
Oh, wow.
So from 7.4. So it's really a lot. This not, doesn't happen in the blood, but in the muscle can occur. So if this occur, the pH can increase up to 25%, 20-25%. So it means that you are 1/4 more stiff than normal. That is
Wow.
really a lot.
Yeah.
Really a lot. So 1/4 more stiffness means that you feel that it's not a piece of wood, but it's still like a heavy. Of
Right.
course, this will last until you don't metabolize the lactic acid. Or if you do a warming up, because if you warm the tissue, you can still decrease the viscosity as an oil. If you know, heat up the oil, become more lubricant. So, I mean, with the pH, if you drop the pH, it become viscous. But if you warm up, it start to come up. But of course, it will take longer the warming up. After you have done like a 3 day of heavy training, the 4th day you feel like a stiff, you know, maybe with the dumps, and you take longer to feel like as smooth as it was in day one. Because, of course, the pH is low, you have to heat up more. The warming up has to be readjust.
So if there's anything they can do, a lot of hockey players, especially they play late at night too. So they maybe come home at late, like 11:30 or midnight, and then go to sleep. If there's anything they can do right after a game or right after practice that can help with this fluid to feel better or move better or.
I mean, there is not already heavy data, but you know, like a kind of stretching can like squeeze and you know and you know drainage out the exceed or the correct amount of lubricant they have there. So it helps to you know stimulate the replacement. So that can be an idea. Of course, hydration will be important. A combination of these two can help. And of course, you have to adjust the warming up the day after. And ideally, it would be better to keep warm the area rather than keep cold the area, because this, I mean, the lubricant respond better to heat than to cold.
Oh, really? So that's bringing me right into the next question about, like, because there's a lot of there's a big hype right now. Wim Hof started the biggest hype of cold shower and cold immersions. Is how if you just focus on the fascia system and the fascia tissue and the collagen and the lubricants, is that a good idea to do if, like you just said, they like warm, not cold?
You know, there is like a the therapy, like ice therapy, you know, ice bath, and is correct for decrease the inflammation due to multiple micro injury. So, you know, hockey player, rugby player, football player, it makes sense ice bath at the end of the game, because concussion, contusion, you know, strain, whatever it is, it generated like a micro inflammation. So ice bath will drop the soreness and maybe the swelling due to this the trauma, micro trauma. But this doesn't mean that the help for symptoms that last for days, different days, because in that case, it's not an most of the time it's not inflammation if you don't see a real trauma. But if the patient tell you, I mean, it's months, week that I have this symptom, I mean, I didn't have a specific trauma over there, and the inflammation cannot go ahead for months, that most of the time is a myofascial problem. So warm will help. In fact, you will see a lot of people say, look, you know, if tomorrow it's going to rain, you know, I feel my knee, it hurts. So whenever there's a drop of the temperature, drop of the humidity, you know, a lot of myofascial pain come up. And so whenever some athletes tell you, look, you know, when the weather change, my knee hurts, my shoulder hurts, that is myofascial problem. Whatever athletes tell you, look, you know, a hot shower make it easier the symptom, that's myofascial pain. So that is the easy, faster way to figure it out, is a real inflammation or what they call nociplastic myofascial pain. So it respond to cold, real inflammation, respond to warm, but warm it's mean like a laser, infrared, hot package, anything of that is heating modality. So every heating modality that work out, that is myofascial pain, and nothing to do with the typical chemical inflammation due to swelling.
So let's say we have athletes. Let's say we train here in the off season, and we do. Let's say we do a speed session outside. We do some change of direction. We do some speed work: 10 meters, 20 meters, 30 meters. What would the best like? So after the session, would it be better for the athletes to do just to enhance performance? They don't have any pain. So to enhance performance and thinking about the fascia system, would it be better for them to jump in a cold tub or to do something with like infrared or other heat stuff?
Technically, there's no indication to do anything special, because I mean, if the training is regular, I mean, you should not overload, exceed overload the structure, so you don't generate any kind of injury. The idea is that to try to, you know, restore the physiology in that compartment. So I would say, look, you have done a lot of load, a lot of short, you know, sprints in that area. So it's not like an harmonic global activity. It's very segmented, explosive. So try to stretch out the area. Try to restore the range of motion of the joint that you have worked in, you know, with a shorter range and a high load. So some stretch in that case can be helpful to prepare the body to another session the day after. Otherwise, it can be the day after the patient feel a little bit more stiff, a little bit less, you know, like explosive, because the mechanics is could be like a little bit, you know, not optimal.
So maybe it's just better to do some a little bit of stretching, maybe do some foam rolling and other,
Right.
therapy stuff.
Right.
And it really doesn't matter. But if they like to do like a cold tub or whatever, hot shower or sauna.
They are free to do that. I mean,
Okay.
of course, I mean, I believe that sauna and hot bath, it will be ideal and more relaxing rather than cold. Okay.
Yeah.
If you are in this situation, but if you have a, a hockey player that have hit multiple time, maybe the ice can be better. Okay. So
Right.
if there is no trauma, the hot will relax, release, decrease the tension, and give like that the relief that will be useful for the athletes.
Will the red light therapy helps to heal fascia injuries?
Red light is still like a heat modality. So whatever heat modality you apply, it will work.
Okay, nice. That's pretty cool. So I'm curious about this. So fascia is, it's collagen, and collagen is the most abundant protein in our body. And we know we have this lubricant that we call the ECM or the extracellular matrix because it's outside the cells. And that the hyaluronic acid is like the main product there. And we know when we load a lot, like hockey players do, we create lactic acid and the pH drop, and it gets tougher to move because the lubricants gets away from oil, more like more gluey, or honey to glue, and it's harder to move. So let's do hockey as skating to take strides in hockey. It's like an external rotation, abduction, flexion movement. And we know the body, when we're walking, running, and jumping, is it wants to be internally rotated and adducted. So it's like totally opposite against what the human body wants to do. So my question is, I don't know if you can answer this, but you can have an opinion. Is can we build, because the skating movement, they skate maybe 1.5 to 2 hours a day. Can they build so much strong collagen from that, from skating? So eventually it gets so stiff in their hips that they have a hard time moving, just from skating.
Not in short term, but in long term, they could generate a reinforcement that can limit the abduction of the hip. So this can technically happen, but it take a year, not month, years. So you have still a large therapeutic window to take care of these athletes, treat properly, maintain adaptability, elasticity, to avoid overload at the head of the hip. Because the problem is that you pack the head of the femoral against the stabilum due to the stiffness around, and that generates early arthritis. Okay, this is the why.
Great. I know you have to go soon, Antonio. I just want to last quick tip for athletes out there, how to take care of their fascia and what to think about when they train. Quick one. And after that, just to tell me where we can find you. But start with just a quick tip for the athletes out there.
I mean, again, we say that each athlete has to be a customized warming up, a customized training. So this is very important. And you can have athletes that have to do like weightlifting, and you have to keep like a stiff fascia rather than athletes that need like full elasticity. I don't want to say just ballerina, but athletes that have to really be heavy coordinating the motion, that to have a very elastic, really good proprioception. So this is why you have to customize warming up, treatment, and also training, because under the light of the fascia anatomy, you have to take consideration that this is a key tissue that you train and you have to dealing with. So forget about this tissue. It means that you're forgetting about at the least one third of your mechanics, but I believe even more. So really, that is really a pity that we are in 2024 and people forget about one of the major tissue of your body.
But that's why we're here, just to spread the word that this is something we really, really need to focus on to better enhance performance and shorter rehab times and do better rehab and come back and do what we love the most, sports. And Antonio, where can we find you? If people want to know more about you and meet you or see you or study with you, where do they find you?
You can go in our website, www.fascialmanipulation.com. So that is our website. You find out all the information. You find out our contact, our material. We do every Wednesday a webinar to keep people updated. It's free for everybody, so people can step in and meet us and ask questions to us. There's multiple language. Every Wednesday there's a different language. So I mean, we try to spread the world with this information. It's our mission. It's true. This is the reason, and I hope that more and more people start to be aware of this and start to make our athletes at the best, because this is what we need to do.
Absolutely. And I know you're working with some baseball teams in the US, right?
Yeah, I train half of the baseball team in US. They are doing pretty well. I mean, we are now consultant. I go there in pre-season. I follow them during the season, and we see that such athletes like baseball, tennis, golf, they need this because they need sophisticated, very clear and precise biomechanics.
Love it. Antonio, thank you so much for taking the time. And you know what? I'm going to be with you all the way because I know this works. So I'm with you. I'm with you doing the work, spreading the word.
All right. Thanks a lot, Andrew.
Of course. Thank you for taking the time. I know everyone that's listened to this are very thankful for your time, and I am too. So great to meet you again. I hope we can do this again sometime. Take care,
Thanks
man.
a lot.
Thanks
Bye.
a lot. Bye-bye.